You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks.
Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins, the Director of Leadership at Lifeway Christian Resources. Hey, Todd.
Yep.
Today, we are asking 5 leadership questions of Jason Romano. That might not be a name that you recognize from, you know, headlining conferences and the like, but Jason has one of the most interesting jobs of anybody we've talked to, although I'm very biased on this. Jason works at ESPN, though, so everybody knows ESPN, and he's been there for about 15 years in various roles. He has worked on SportsCenter, which I'm sure you've heard about, a little show called Monday Night Football, a popular morning radio show called Mike and Mike. He now works oversees social media for both ESPN's NFL coverage and their Major League Baseball coverage, so two somewhat significant portions of what they do. And then he's worked on College Game Day, the NFL Countdown, Major League Baseball's Home Run Derby, and so forth. So has had his hands in a lot of the most significant broadcasts that ESPN does. But, of course, more significantly than all of that is Jason's role as a father and as a husband and as an elder at his church. So he is bringing faith into a pretty unique workplace and a pretty unique management and leadership role, and we are excited to talk to him. So, Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's an honor to be on with you.
And could you just give us a sense? I mean, I listed off a whole bunch of stuff that you do, but most people don't know ESPN behind the scenes that well, other than what Bill Simmons yells about. And and so if you could just give us a sense of what you do, and then also just a little bit about yourself, your family, your life and faith, so that people have a sense of who it is we're talking to today.
Sure. So like you mentioned, I've been at ESPN for about 15 years, a little over 15 years, actually. I started in July of 2000. My goal when I was a young lad growing up was to be in broadcasting, specifically sports broadcasting. And I was thankful I was able to achieve that goal. I am currently the senior manager and producer of our NFL social media / digital media, as well as our Major League Baseball social and digital efforts. I mostly oversee social media. Digital kind of falls under that spectrum as well, but I oversee all of the NFL content. Baseball is now finished, obviously, but I oversee all the NFL content that appears on our ESPN social media pages, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. So that's my kind of day-to-day job. I'm sort of in that middle role as a leader at ESPN. I have people who report into me, people who I obviously report into as well. We have a team of about 25 or 30 people or so that are in our social media group at ESPN. So I've been doing that for a while. I've been doing that job for 4 years. Before that, I was a talent booker, a talent producer on the television side. I used to book all the guests that would come on our various shows. That's why I have my hand in so many different areas of ESPN, on our broadcasts, on our daily shows, and on our network shows, as well as radio, which is where I got my start at ESPN. I was an ESPN radio producer for 3.5 years. Radio was sort of my passion, and I was sort of my baby, if you will, when I was younger, and always wanted to be on the radio, both as a broadcaster, and then as I got out of college, I realized the behind the scenes is probably the way to go, and did local radio before I got to ESPN. So that's how I got my start there.
Were you on one of those local area sports talk shows that are, you know, all just spitting hot takes like it's nobody's business, and the shock jocks and all that stuff?
This is in the late 90s when I was working in local radio. And, you know, I got my start, believe it or not, at a news talk station. And the first show I ever worked on was an afternoon talk show, political and like news and information talk show. I never worked in sports talk radio.
Oh, really? Okay.
on the local level.
I was hoping you had like a really good moniker.
moniker?
Well, you know, like every
you mean
morning,
like a catchphrase?
Every morning show has, you know, so in Nashville, the country music station, it's the host is Bobby somebody or other, but he goes by Bobby Bones. It's the Bobby Bones show.
Bobby Bones.
And in, where I grew up in Minnesota, the guy who hosts the morning show on the sports talk show is Mike the Superstar Morris, because he was the former long snapper for the Vikings, and so he called himself the Superstar as sort of an ironic name. So did you have one of those? Like,
one in college. I called myself the Emperor.
Yes.
Which was...
See? That's a moniker.
That's so lame, though.
Is that tied to, like, the Roman in Romano or what?
No.
It was tied to Star Wars, probably.
Ah, man.
First of all...
And that's where it probably came from.
Gotcha.
First of all, you should never admit that.
I think I just did.
Second of all,
Jason
Romano is already an awesome name, so you never needed a moniker.
Thank you.
And third of all, I just want to clarify that a moniker is okay. Monocle, not okay.
I don't know. That we live in Nashville, the land of hipsters. I think monocles are probably going to be really popular in the next year.
Maybe that's monocles, the future trend.
Yeah. A cardigan. As long as you're holding a cat, I think you're okay.
Very true. Very true.
Fluffy one.
That's
yes,
right.
Very fluffy. But I guess I could tell you a little personal stuff. I'm married. I've been married. We just recently celebrated our 16th wedding anniversary. I have one daughter who's 11. I've had many people, specifically friends in my church, tell me you're not real parents because you only have one child. But that's okay. That's what we are. That's where we are.
Wait, people told you that in seriousness or as a...
No, I think they were busting my chops. I mean, most of my friends, most of my church friends especially, have multiple kids. I have two brothers, younger brothers. They both have four kids. So for us to have one kid and then whenever we complain that it's so hard to raise a child today, they're like, you got one. We have four, you know, you guys both have multiple kids too. It's like, that's, you know, it's different when you start adding a second or third or fourth child into the mix. When you have one, it's kind of like, I don't know, I'm not saying it's been easy for us, but it's just one. You know?
But I still think you qualify as a parent.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I got 14 nieces and nephews. So I'm also well suited as an uncle too. So there, yeah.
No, that's great.
And I've also, I'll finish real quick, I'm sorry, you know, have a child who's 11, and then I also am an elder in my church. You mentioned that in the introduction. I've been a Christian for 14 years. I became a believer in 2001 and got plugged into a church in 2003, Hillside Community Church in Bristol, Connecticut, where I live. And I've been a part of Hillside for 12 years. And I've been an elder at the church now on the leadership team for the last two. So it's been fun.
Well, great. That's great. That gives us a lot of context. I mean, obviously have a number of directions we can go. So I'm interested to see what you say for our first question. That, and you've mentioned that you listened to the podcast before, so you've heard the question. You are prepared for this, I would imagine. But that is, who are you learning from right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great question and a simple question, and there's so many different directions you can go. For me personally, I'm learning from a ton of people because from a work level, I'm certainly learning from, you know, the talent I work with, the producers, the people that I'm working with on a daily basis. You spend most of your time at your job, so I'm obviously learning from people like that. The big thing I'm learning from them is right now is failing forward and sort of that challenge of trying new things and not being afraid to post something or create something that might not work, but at least learning from that and going forward with that and not having it be a major setback in the daily workings of our jobs. So I'm learning from a ton of people I work with. Personally, I'm learning from my brother, you know, just to give him a shout out, his name is Chris Romano. He is a pastor. He's a dad of four. He's a professor, and he's just an incredible leader, and he's incredibly smart. He's smarter than I could ever even dream of being, and I just watch him and how he lives his life, how he loves his wife, how he loves his children, how he leads and loves the people in his church. I'm just in awe of watching him on a daily basis. I don't see him every day like I wish I could, but when I do see him, I just am so proud of him, who he's become. And being a younger brother and still learning from him, I call him my little older brother because he's 3 years younger than me, but I'm like, you know, he's my hero and how he's kind of ended up with his life and how he does life. So in a personal sense, I learned from him. And then obviously leadership has been a thing for me now for probably the last couple of years. I wish that I had taken that more seriously when I was probably in my early 30s, especially with my job. And just over the last few years, reading a ton of books. The first book I read about 4 years ago is a book called Lead for God's Sake by an author named Todd Gongwer. And it's not a well-known book, I don't believe. He's not a mainstream author with like 30 books on leadership or anything. But it's this book that was given to me by a publicist I knew. And it's a parable for basically finding the heart of leadership. And it's done in story form, obviously. It's not, you know, nonfiction or anything like that. But it just taught me so much about the idea of serving and the idea of putting others first and taking yourself sort of out of your mindset and just loving others and serving others. And that book really opened my eyes. It's one of the best books I've ever read.
And that was called Lead for God's Sake, and it was by Todd
Gongwer, G-O-N-G-W-E-R.
All right. And yeah. For listeners, we'll drop that in the show notes so you can find it there. But I just want to repeat it so that people could take note of it. So Lead for God's Sake by Todd Gongwer.
Yes. One of the best books I've ever read. And John Gordon's another guy. You probably know John. He's written a ton of books on leadership, and he does it in the form of parables as well. And he wrote a book called The Carpenter, which is, he calls it the story about the greatest success strategies of all time. But it's written, again, in the form of a story. And his motto in that book is the simple success of loving, serving, and caring. And when you do that, you know, things start to really align in your life, and you're kind of following the biblical model of how to treat people and how to work with people. And I have that on my desk at my work, of just writing the greatest success model: loving, serving, caring. And I try to bring that model not only in my personal life with my family, with my wife, with my church family, but also my job, and really putting others first. So it's been great.
Do you find that, I mean, a couple different books you mentioned, both of them were written in sort of a story form. Do you find that kind of communication of leadership principles is something you attach yourself better to than maybe the more traditional sort of seven ways to do X or three principles about this? So is narrative something you connect with better?
I think so. I mean, it's funny because probably 5 years ago, if you asked me that question, I would have said no. You know, give me a list of things and let me just follow those things to do. But when I got introduced to this book, the Lead for God's Sake book, it really sort of opened my eyes to how you can teach the principles of leadership and teach the principles that you want to try to put into play in your life through telling story. And the narrative side has really been, I haven't read a ton of things from the narrative world, because so many leadership books are written in that sort of way that you just described. You know, we were talking before we started taping about Brad Lominick and his H3 leadership book, which is fantastic. And I read that a couple months ago, and just phenomenal. But that's not in more of a narrative way. I mean, I guess it is in sort of a lot of first person storytelling in what Brad experienced. But, you know, there's a list of sort of things that have helped him.
Yeah, it lays out 20 principles.
Exactly. Practices. And that book was great. And I've not underlined a book more probably in my entire life other than the Bible when I read Brad's book. There was so much great stuff in there.
Well, I think books like that are, you know, honestly, there's a barrier to entry for some people on books. Maybe, you know, it's been 5 or 6 years since they graduated and they never wanted to read another book again.
Right.
And they just can't get into it. So I think, you know, the narrative books, leadership books, are a way for people to get into that and connect with it. And also, depending on your, you know, your personality type and stuff too.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, on the business side, there's lots of books like that, you know, like Who Moved My Cheese, which is basically, I could read it, you know, while I'm waiting for the plane to take off. It doesn't even take an entire plane.
Yes.
Right? But there are things like that that are really helpful to help people wade into the leadership space or the leadership book space anyway. I want to go ahead and move us into our second question. For the sake of time, I've really enjoyed getting to know you, your background, and just where you're coming from. What you do is unique. It's different than anybody we've talked to. So what is the main point of emphasis for your leadership, either leading your team or leading yourself right now?
It's a great question. And I love hearing all the different answers, obviously, listening to your guys' podcast.
I know you kind of cheated, man.
I did cheat. You know, I mean, I don't know. What am I supposed to do? If you watch football and then people start asking you about football, you watched it already, you know? So, yeah. But, you know, obviously my answer is going to be different, hopefully, than everybody else's. But I think my main point of emphasis right now from a team perspective is to continue to learn. I work in a young group. You know, I'm definitely one of the oldest, if not the oldest person in the 25 to 30 people that I work with in social media. And so your common age person is probably 27. And we have guys and girls that are 22, 23. We have people who are in their early 30s, mid 30s is probably the top point of where our top leaders are as far as social media. And then there's like somebody like myself who's in his early 40s. And so with that, I'm just trying to learn from them and not think that I know it all. And that's a big emphasis with our group, is to not kind of have a discriminatory look at social, like somebody who's 22 comes in and thinks they know it all, and somebody who's 40 comes in and thinks they know it all. And we're really just trying to learn from each other and find each other's talents, because listen, a 40-year-old is thinking differently than a 23 or 24-year-old. So I think the emphasis for our team is to try and figure out how to mesh those well, because we're all in some ways doing a lot of the same things. You know, I think in a normal business world, you have a 40-year-old who's sort of the manager and a 30-year-old who's sort of the leading projects, but he's still in the trenches, and then the 20-year-old who's just doing all the dirty work. It doesn't really work like that in our place, because we're all sort of hybrids and doing a lot of different things in different areas of social and digital: content creation, posting, editing, video, working with talent, things like that. We're all sort of doing that. So I think that's been a huge emphasis from the team perspective on that. From a personal perspective, it's really just relationships and networking for me. And that's been a big emphasis on growing as a leader, you know, talking to different people, both in and outside of the work that I do. And really, my mentor, Jerry Madelon, one of the mentors I have at ESPN, you know, his motto, he taught me this about 6 years ago, and he's a very spiritual person. I don't think he's a Christian, but he's a very spiritual person in the sense that he sees people for deeper than just being employees. And he always told me, go the 80-20 model in life and you'll be good. And this includes work as well. And when he says 80-20, he means 80% deposit, 20% withdrawal. So if you're asking for stuff consistently and asking for other people to do for you, then you got it mixed up. You're backwards. But if you're 80% deposit in life into people, whether it's work or relationships or life or church, if you're pouring into other people, and then that 20% is where you might take a withdrawal every so often, that's kind of how I've been trying to focus my direction, my life, my work leadership in that vein of 80-20.
That's really good.
That's a really interesting framework, because I think if you kind of think about how that plays out in life, if you're putting in 80% deposit, or just the mindset of I will be investing in others more than I'm taking from them, I think most people will find that you don't have to make nearly as many withdrawals, because right, there's a return on that investment that happens out of gratitude, out of share and share alike, out of this sense of you build goodwill, you build relationships. I mean, a genuine relationship is something where neither party is forced to ask too often, because both parties are looking out for the other. And I don't often hear it framed that way, especially not in the business world, though. Usually it's a 50-50. I do for you, you do for me.
Very much so. And in a lot of ways, it might even be reversed in such a cutthroat world of everybody wanting to get to the next level and everybody wanting to impress. And, you know, listen, with 25 to 30 people in our group at the office, you know, there's competition within all of us too. And I'm sure there is in most businesses of everybody's trying to one up the other person or do better work than the other person. And, you know, it's easy to get caught up in that. You know, our art or our production or our video looks way better than that other person's video. And yet you're in the same group. It's like we're all a team. So if we try to look at it the other way and put it with, if we just want the other person to do well, it's going to reflect better on you. If people below me are doing great work and they're getting promoted and in sense even promoted higher than I am, then I feel like I did my job because I was working with them and investing with them and trying to make them better. And hopefully that reflects well on me too.
Yeah, it's come up on this podcast, I think, in two or three different conversations, once with Brad Lominick, once with Eric Geiger, at least, that if leaders, an insecure leader feels like if you're building other people up to promotion, you're risking your own job. But the point that those guys have made and that Todd has made a dozen times is that if you are constantly developing other people, there will always be a place for you because there's always people who need that. So that idea of investing in others is actually job security, not working your way out of a job.
Completely agree.
I would say if you look at where things are going in the future, when we look at the future of work, and we've said it again before, in a lot of cases it's about outcomes. It's not about hours.
Right.
It's the commoditization of work. And so the only way to be different is there will always be doers. There will not always be developers. So, you know, if I'm hiring somebody as a business, I want to hire a developer, not a doer. There's plenty of doers out there. I can contract doers. But, you know, as far as who's going to be on my team, I want developers, and I want to develop developers. And honestly, you know, that goes back to really the biblical concept of discipleship. When you look at development or discipleship, it's really about what you're producing. It's not about doing. It's about developing. Because disciples make disciples. We, you know, sometimes get caught up in disciples do. Well, yes, but they're developing other people by their very definition.
Absolutely. And I think there's so many people who are afraid or have this fear of people coming and potentially taking their jobs or pushing them out. And I don't like that model at all. I don't think it works. You're training them up so that they're hopefully better performers than you and they succeed that way, but you can't live in fear of them taking your job. In some ways you hope they take your job because then that means you did your job, that you equipped them in a way to be good enough to be where you are, hopefully better than you are.
Well, I think given, you know, talking about the challenges here and this point of emphasis, it's a good time to ask our third question, and that is, what obstacles do you currently face in leadership? And that could be organizationally, some of the things you've already mentioned maybe, or personally in terms of just your own personal development, your involvement at church. What are some of those obstacles and challenges that you're looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked a lot about work. I'll go to the church route first here. I think, you know, I'm an elder at my church. I've been an elder for 2 years now, and I'm sort of still learning the sort of leadership role in our church. Our church is about 300 people. It's not a giant church of any sort.
That's big for the Northeast, though.
Oh, Connecticut. I would think that would be a mega church.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's all I've known is Connecticut and New York in my life. So I guess 300, it's a good sized church. You know, they're doing pretty well at Hillside, and we've grown a lot since I've been there, which is really good. But that's where I think the obstacle comes is balancing, you know, the growth of a church. And I've heard this mentioned from giant churches, you know, mega churches, people like Craig Rochelle that you've had on and Kerry Newhoff and others, is balancing the growth of a church in the numbers side of it versus the discipleship side and the teaching and equipping the people who are already there. And that's a huge obstacle, I think, for us, especially as we try to figure out if we want to grow from 300 to 400, which I think every church would love to grow in that sense, because now that you're getting them in the building, now you can equip them. But it's really not losing focus of the people that are the sort of nuts and bolts of your ministry and the nuts and bolts of the regular attendance that you see every week. And we can't forget about those people. And in a smaller church, in the sense of, yes, 300 is a mega church in New York or Connecticut or the Northeast, but at the same time, you know, our elder board is five people. And, you know, those five people can only do so much. And our pastor, we have one pastor, we have a student pastor, we have a couple of assistant pastors. And that's where we can't lose focus. And that's a challenge, I think, that we discover. We're also getting ready for our first church plant in the spring of 2016. And that's a big deal. We're sending out our pastor's son, who's sort of all of our age, he's in his late 30s, and his wife and three kids are getting ready to go plant a church in Hartford, Connecticut, about 25 minutes from Bristol. And we've never done that before. So we're trying to figure out how to navigate that area and really truly make that as much a success as we can in reaching people for God, because when you haven't done it before, the model, especially in a smaller church frame like ours, you know, you're not sure what works and what doesn't. You know, you can read a ton of books, you can talk to a ton of people who planted churches, but you've never gone that route before. So I think obstacle wise, that's huge for us, is right now balancing growth with the discipleship and trying to figure out how to navigate into that world of church plant that we've never been before.
I will tell you this really quickly, just to plug something else that we do under the leadership area at Lifeway. We actually have a whole section that's called New Churches.
Okay.
And Daniel M, who's, you know, also on this podcast from time to time, is over that. And all that he focuses on are church plants and multi-site. And probably a little more heavy on church plants at this time, but, you know, there's the New Churches podcast. There's all kinds of stuff over there. But specifically, we have, I don't know, a couple grand worth of resources available to new churches for free, and that's resourcing really well. So, you know, Ministry Grid, who sponsors this podcast, is one of the things we do. All the training that you would, you know, need to launch, all that is totally free for church plants, because, you know, so many church plants fail. And if there's anything that we can do to resource them better, whether it be through curriculum, training, whatever, then we want to do that. So I don't know who's running that on your side of the house, but I would definitely want to just plug that and connect them to that, because, and him as a resource as well. So they can hit him up on Twitter and he'll respond pretty quickly.
Definitely. We will definitely tap into that for sure.
Yeah, so newchurches.com, pretty easy to remember. And that's where you can go. And for listeners, if your church is involved in church planting and spinning off another campus, newchurches.com, they have their own podcast where they field questions from planters and multi-site folks. And so they that's another great resource. And we have Daniel on from time to time, and we may talk to him more about that in the future. But I think this is a good time to move to our fourth question, because we have kind of moved from the office to the church, and now we get to look more at the personal life. And the question is, Jason, what does leadership in your home look like for you, your wife, your daughter? What is the home context and leadership there look like?
Yeah, it's messy, I would say, because you bring in the work-life balance and the church world as well, and it's far from perfect by any means. You know, work is a vital part of my life, obviously, in terms of where I spend my time and how I'm hoping to provide for my family. And that work, unfortunately, is in the broadcast field, where there's games and there's events, and there's really no 9-to-5-ish type job in our role. You know, there's games on nights, there's games on Sundays, on the weekends, and Monday nights, and broadcasts and shows. And
if you're on the East Coast and you're doing West Coast games,
yeah,
they're games all night long.
Yeah, we have people in our group that are leaving office at 3:30 in the morning, and they come in at 5 o'clock at night. It's just, you know, that's how it is. I'm thankful I don't have to work the late games anymore. But that's a challenge for us in the home, is really just availability. And I consistently wrestle with that. The fall and into the winter is difficult for me because of the NFL season, and really just pouring yourself into your work and balancing that with trying to be home and be available to your wife, to be available to your daughter. It's a very big challenge for me. And I think that's where I'm struggling with. I guess that goes to obstacles too in your third question, but leadership in the home right now is just trying to be available to my wife and to my daughter and serve them and love them more than I've been doing. And that's a consistent, you know, growth, a consistent challenge, a consistent thing I'm working on to make better every day. You know, certainly there's spending time with my wife and daughter. You know, being home for dinner is a big thing when I don't have a game to cover. Every night I want to be home by 6:30 or so we can sit at the table and just stop work, stop life, and just kind of connect for a little bit. You know, that prayer time, that time alone with my daughter at night when I put her to bed, even at 11 years old, that's not changing. I've been doing this since she's been 3 or 4. That's not changing. And I really want her to understand that model of A, your dad loves you and he cares for you, but like prayer is number one. And we've been having some really deep conversations now that she's 11 that we could never have had at 4 or 5.
Right.
When we spend that time together in the evening, when I go upstairs and it's 8:50, which is an odd time, but that's her bedtime, 8:50. And she lays down and I come right alongside, get on my knees, and we just talk for a few minutes and then we pray. And that time is precious. And the conversations now are, I'm learning from my 11-year-old, which I never thought I don't know why you won't grasp that when you're a dad. You know, you're learning in everything, but like my 11-year-old is teaching me things now about me, you know, constantly asking questions. Daddy, when are you going to be home from work on Sundays? You know, when is football stop? When, you know, she's asking a lot of questions about like the future and availability and jobs and things like that, that I really don't have a lot of answers to, but I love the fact that her mind's thinking like that. So that prayer time is vital.
And if she's anything like, I still have a 10-year-old daughter, just turned 10, that time doubles as I can delay going to sleep if I ask enough good questions. And so 8:50 for you turns into like a 9:25 bedtime because there's a whole bunch of good questions. And man, does a kid's mind work really well right when they're supposed to be going to sleep.
God, that's so funny. Yeah. The other night we had that exact same thing happen. It was 8:50. We sat down, we started talking. And she was asking me like all these interesting questions. And the next thing I looked, it was 9:30. And I said, wait a minute, Sarah, I love you, but this is bedtime. You got a test tomorrow. We got to go to bed.
And because I love you, you need to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing this for the good.
Know that there's a window of time that this is going to happen, and eventually it will close for a while.
Yes.
At least for most families and teenagers, I think that window closes for a while. So,
I don't know what it's going to be like. Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be like when she's 13, 14, 15, but I don't really want to know. There's a little bit of a fear there as a dad to like, I don't want her to be a teenager.
Well, I think that transition, that's very well into our last question. And that is taking you back to when you had that wonderful radio moniker. What was that again?
The Emperor.
The Emperor.
Yeah.
So around the time you were 20, what would you tell your 20-year-old self? What would you tell the Emperor about preparing to lead?
Well, I'd tell him to don't use the Emperor, first thing I'd say. Like, get rid of that, please. Because you thought you were hot stuff when you were in college doing a radio show and calling yourself the Emperor, and 120 people were listening every night to your show. Like, you thought you were big-time stuff, but you really weren't. I'd tell my 20-year-old self that, first of all, it's not about you, which is almost impossible to get a 20-year-old to understand because, you know, you're going to school and you're trying to better your education and get ready to like be a productive citizen and be an adult and go out on your own and all that. And all you're thinking about is you. And man, I wish that when I was 20 that I had any kind of a servant's heart to help others and to do for others. I had zero of that. So I would definitely tell myself, it's not all about you. You don't know everything. But on a sort of smaller level, I would just say read more and write more. I never took advantage of the idea that I could read more. Like, all I read was Sports Illustrated and books about sports and books about broadcasting, because that's what I wanted to do as a job. And I wish that I had read more books. You know, John Maxwell stuff is great, and I read a ton of his leadership books. I know they were around 20 years ago, and I would love to go on back and read those. But I wasn't thinking like that then. I didn't have anybody to tell me this is going to help you when you get older. So I wish I had like a mentor or somebody older that could have like poured into me and showed me that there's more than just this little broadcast world that you want to get into.
I think you just touched on something that's like a principle of being young and immature. And that is the things you think are most worth your time probably aren't worth as much. And the things that you think are a waste of time, like say reading a novel or reading a biography or reading a leadership book, are probably worth a lot more than you think, but you don't have the perspective to see it at 18 or 20. And so you need somebody to say, no, you really ought to read these things because it'll really benefit you in the future.
Man, that's so true. That's so true. And I wish that I had that. I try to be that guy now at 40 to tell the 20-year-olds that I see, in our young adults group at church or our youth group, even the 17, 18-year-olds, like, do more reading, do more writing. You know, the access that you have now with social media and digital media and sort of the changing landscape of how you're getting information, just engulf yourself in things that you might not think are beneficial now, but trust me, they will help you going forward. You know, I started a blog last year. I just started writing a personal blog about my life and different lessons I've learned and things like that. And I wish that I had started any kind of writing skills when I was younger. And I didn't. I didn't really like taking English classes. I didn't like learning or trying to write. I just did what I had to do to get done so I could get into the broadcast world and get my job. And I never took the time to really understand the importance of what it is to truly read and understand things that you're not necessarily interested in, but are interesting and beneficial to you. And the same with writing.
Well, I think that is a great place for us to land this for time's sake, as well as just I think we've left listeners with a really practical piece of advice. If you could just share, what is the where can they find that blog? Is it just jasonromano.com or what is the website?
Jason Romano, it's not the emperor.com.
That's right.
Although maybe I have to change my name now.
I think if it was the emperor, it would be the emperor.net.
Yeah, .net or .org.
That's right.
But no, it's Jason Romano 22. So just my name and then the number 22.com is my blog. And then my Twitter handle is Jason Romano, just one word.
All right. So listeners, JasonRomano22.com, and you can read that blog. Since he started it up a few months ago, I've been keeping up with it. And he has posted some very helpful things, some Q&As with different people, some quotes from H3 Leadership by Lominick, and then just some of his own personal reflections. It's all very helpful stuff. Jason, we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule during this insane-o season for you to answer our questions and talk with us a little bit.
Guys, it's my honor for being on your podcast. I'm a big fan, as I said earlier, and I really appreciate you having me.
Excellent. We love having you, and it's so good to meet you. We met Jason like 6 months ago, and it's been an ongoing relationship. And I think one of the beautiful things about the world we live in is being able to connect with and be affected by people that are hundreds or thousands of miles away. It's just a beautiful thing.
It's true. Social media brings a lot of nasty into the world, but in instances like this, it is a big, big blessing. So we appreciate that. Appreciate you, Jason. For you listeners, we will drop all of the URLs we mentioned, the books we talked about, into the show notes. You can go to lifeway.com/churchleaders, and you can find those there. When you hear this episode, go there, read through that. You'll see some of the quotes. If you could also jump on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. That helps other leaders like yourself find the podcast. Also strokes our ego, which is always a nice thing. And if you write a really good review, we may read it on a future podcast. So if you would do that for us, we'd really appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.